Blog Talk Radio.
Musing Show with Mary Brown. I am that Mary Brown, and today I am so excited. I am joined by a wonderful co-host as my guest co-host this week, multi-talented recording artist and modern mystic, Cedar Branches. Yay! Welcome, Cedar, to the show, everybody. Hello, Cedar.
Greetings and blessings.
So glad you could be available. You were like Mr., like, I don't know, man of many hats and many talents and lots of magic. You got all kinds of things going on, so I'm so happy that you could find time in your schedule to join me here today to talk about, you know, something that I feel like you and I have talked about a lot, but also we've talked about the fact that, like, we're not hearing about it a lot from the, you know, the atmosphere, whatever, you know, that energy out there in the world that we're moving through, and that is compassion. It seems like, you know, this isn't a new idea, but hello, do we need to introduce this again to people? What are your feelings?
Yeah, I think it's definitely a time where compassion is really important. You know, we're looking at a world that's facing a lot of division, and really all of our solutions lie in unifying, and compassion's just the center key for that happening.
Yeah, I agree with that. And, you know, I think it, you know, a lot of times we tend to kind of look at things from the perspective of, like, you know, where we are, you know, they're like, you know, self, you know, centric, you know, our feelings, you know, and how we're moving in the world. And I think that, you know, it's easy to get, you know, caught up in that. But I think that also, you know, this is something like the world over. You've traveled to many places. I've traveled to many places. And, you know, the suffering's not unique, you know, and I think we forget that, and we get lost in it sometimes, or we think that it belongs to somebody else, and like, oh, well, glad, you know, I feel like the tendency is to, like, you know, overwhelmingly, I see people out there, like, looking at, you know, someone else who's suffering and be like, wow, glad that's not me, instead of, how can I help you? You know, am I being too cynical? Is it too cynical of a view, do you think?
Yeah, there's a lot of compassion in the world. You know, it's not an all or nothing, but there's a lot of validity to what you're saying. You know, we all have our own experience and our own karmic challenges, you know, our own suffering to say, and that suffering is valid. And it's often difficult for us to understand that other people have their own karmic lessons and their own suffering, you know, and so we have less sympathy for that and less allowance for that, you know, especially if it challenges our reality. So we've got an environment that creates this very self-centric world, and it doesn't really allow people to go through the lessons that are going to help them grow, you know, because we're judging it against our own experience, you know, and that's really one of our biggest mistakes in all of it. You know, we all learn at different rates and at different orders, and, you know, we all have our own unique gifts and unique challenges. And there's really no way for me, for example, to understand what someone else is actually going through and experiencing from inside of their world. You know, that's something that only they could understand. And so compassion is a great tool, because compassion understands and acknowledges that there's this dynamic that happens, that everyone has their own form of suffering, and that we can be gentle with each other in that, you know, and have understanding and allow people to go through those difficult lessons without needing to confront them, divide, argue, debate. You know, it's like this stuff doesn't teach people lessons. You know, the lessons
yeah.
are already there. They're to be learned. And it creates a interesting dynamic when I try and involve myself with the karma of someone else as if I know what's best for them, you know, which is a very ego-centered view, you know, to think that I know what's best for someone else. And what happens is there's a karmic entanglement that happens then, because I end up taking on the burden of another and the lessons
right.
of another, even though they're not mine, and I can't solve them. And so I become stuck, and they become stuck, and I'll insert myself and prevent them from learning. And I'll actually end up denying or delaying those lessons. Whereas if I'm encouraging someone and operating from a place of compassion, then I allow them and I encourage what's right for them in their heart, even if it doesn't seem to make much logical sense to me. You know, because that's the fastest track to the lesson.
Yeah. No, I think that's, preach it, brother, you know, preach it. I feel like that is, you said, there's the whole show, folks, right there.
You know, like, yeah. We'll see you next month on Mystical Meeting.
Yeah, have a mystical weekend. We're done here. I'm going to go have a beer now. But no, I mean, it you hit on so much there. You know what's funny is that judgment part, right? Because, you know, I read this funny thing that, you know, it made me think of you, because so often we're talking about paradoxes, and this was like about the paradox of non-judgmental compassion, and the paradox being that non-judgmental compassion does not judge those who reject the way of non-judgment. So, you know, it's like you can throw that out there, and you can, you know, embody that, and if somebody rejects it, that's okay. You don't even judge for that, you know. So imagine being that unattached, you know. It's like, you know, and I don't know, you know, like, I'm not a Buddhist. Like, I'm not going to say, like, hey, I'm the biggest Buddhist, you know. But I like a lot of things that, you know, I have learned from Buddhism and from reading books on Buddhism. And, you know, I remember something, you know, years ago, something struck me when I was reading the Tibetan Book of Living and Dying. And it was like kind of like, you know, I was reading it to deal with this whole dying and death thing, right? And there was a chapter called Compassion, the Wish-Fulfilling Jewel. And that just, like, that phrase stuck out to me. I'm like, well, what? You know, what is that? What does that mean? You know, how can it be a wish-fulfilling jewel? How could wish fulfillment be attached to compassion in some way? I thought compassion was just caring about other people, not getting what you want. And I didn't realize the relationship between that. I didn't realize the relationship between practicing compassion, you know, making it part of your every day, and what you get out of that. It's like a basic wish that I think most people have, you know, as their intent or their affirmation going in this life, is they want to be happy. You know, they want to be happy, they want to be healthy. Some people want to be wealthy too. You know, whatever. You know, the abundance comes in many forms, right? But I feel like what happens with compassion is like it releases attachments, and in the Buddhist concept, from what I understand of it, if suffering is a given, and suffering is really connected to the attachments that we have, the things we crave, the desires, we want this, we want that, and then that can turn into like negative, you know, almost like negative energetic cords that we use to like attach ourselves to these things that become like, you know, kind of, you know, yucky. And it takes away from our ability to achieve that happiness we say that we want. If you have compassion for someone, it's hard for, you know, meanness and cruelty and kindness to exist in the same heart. You know, I think that, you know, once you let kindness, you know, take up space within your being, then you're not as attached to things. What's there to get angry about? It's a radical idea, but, you know, imagine that compassion is the correct approach to everything in your life to some extent. You know, there's other things you do too. But if that is like you have an argument with your sister, if you have a sister, I don't have a sister. But, you know, if you had one or if I had one and I argued with her, I don't know why I'd do that. But if I did, you know, then, you know, if I approach that, whatever we're fighting about, probably food. I don't know. I don't have a sister. I'm on total shaky ground here with this analogy. But, you know, if I did and I thought of first like, oh, but, you know, I love her or I like her or she's not, you know, she's a good person, then I think that that might, you know, change the quality of my life, you know, that I wouldn't be unhappy about her. And so I would have more happiness instead of less. You know, am I making sense? Am I off track? What's going on here?
Well, you've hit a few really big ones. You know, one of the things that you hit, and it all makes sense. One of the things that you hit is that some of the core tenets of Buddhism, you know, that basically says that desire is the source of all suffering. And so, and that's related to manifestation and this reality that we're in. If I'm in desire for something, then I'm of the perception that that something is not present. So my desire itself actually creates a roadblock to me having that one thing manifest. And so it moves into the need for non-attachment around our desires. When we have an intention and we're able to actually release that desire around it and let the intention go, it opens a space in the universe for our intention to be fulfilled. And so it immediately resolves the suffering that was involved. And that's, you know, that's one of the deeper things that you mentioned first, is that, you know, actually... You know, the lack of compassion or non-attached compassion, as you've put it, is really a main roadblock to actually having our intentions fulfilled. It becomes our biggest thing that causes suffering.
Wow.
You know, and so it's like compassion is much more around this an allowance mentality. And allowance isn't attached, you know, to how things look or how they manifest. And it opens up all kinds of wonderful possibilities. And in these esoteric ways that I'm talking about, you know, that are a little deeper, transcendent, but also more like in the tangible examples of what you said. You know, it's like if I'm in an argument with my sister about a food situation, why would I argue if I just understood that she's hungry and I love her? You know, there's no need for an argument. You know, it just lends to an instant sharing kind of thing, situation where there's no argument need to be had and all that suffering is then relieved. It's averted completely, you know?
Yeah.
And it ends up building in that wonderful yet shaky example that you've given.
Yeah.
It even builds just the dynamic of love between two people, and it creates relationship that's going to be trusting and open and sharing. And you know, and then that relationship gets to be healthy moving forward. So it's not about, you know, what's in it for me and the greed and the things that keep us divided. And do I have agreement? You know, don't I have agreement?
Yeah.
And so it's actually a really great example of how compassion that, or the lack thereof, can play out in our lives.
Well, thank you. You know, it's like, and I feel like, you know, something you just said reminded me of something that, like, you know, when things we can call them synchronicities or coincidences, which, like, I can't even use the word coincidence anymore because everybody's like, there are no coincidences, but maybe there are. But, you know, the thing that I've noticed that's really interesting, and it's been on, like, you know, different topics that I've been discussing with friends or acquaintances or whatever, I will hear the phrase from people, yeah, but how do you convince people of that? And I thought, wow, I don't think about convincing people of anything. That's strange. Like, where is this coming from? It's like, it's this other thing, you know? It's like, and that's like, you know, it's like the competition, you know? It's like the of like, I've got to convince. I've got to convince. And I think it's like with compassion, you don't have to convince, you have to embody, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Right?
Yeah, and even then allow. I mean, there is nothing to convince. You know, if I was to convince someone of my view, then they're going to hold my view. It's not the right view. We're in a subjective reality here, right? It's just another view.
right.
So what is there for me to convince? You know, it's not like I hold all the answers to every problem the world ever has. And, you know, we have a lot of this delusion going on right now where the ego takes over and it's desperate to convince other people of its limited view. Because it helps to provide a validation for our own reality and our own behavior. It doesn't make it right. You know, we're not in a place of righteousness here. No one has all the answers to solve everything. And so, the need to convince others is something else. And when we're able to let go of that need and let go of that ego that has us try and convince others, then you're onto something when it puts us into a different role. It's more like, hey, am I living into and embodying my own values and what I believe in?
Yeah.
And, you know, am I true to myself? And there's even lessons in that, because when we shift into that and we begin to embody, you know, the currency that's our own. And we're trying to, you know, we need to certify the value of our own currency. And we end up learning that we're mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is a chance to grow. And so then the self-compassion piece gets to come in.
Right? Oh, yeah.
And that's like, oh, yeah, you know, I make mistakes too. I get confused too. And I have the ability to learn. And I get to allow myself to go through that. And there's no need to beat ourselves up, or even being in a conversation about right and wrong, or light and dark, or good and evil. Like, these are all ego games.
Yeah.
You know, the universe itself is extremely neutral in its judgment.
Yeah. I think that that's true. I think that, and I think it goes both ways, you know? It's like, you know, on the far end of one side of the spectrum, you've got the universe loves you and is always trying to help you. It's like, really? Just me? is it helping those people? What they do? You know? And then the other, you know, side of the spectrum is like we're just like on a rock hurtling through space, and this is, you know, with the sun that's going to go supernova. You know, it's like, oh, shit, you know, there's the other side. You know, it's kind of funny, and I think, you know, I don't know that we even need to know the truth, right? We could, you know, maybe, you know, have the answer, but I just feel like, you know, we've got all these troubles and blow-ups and literal blow-ups and literal, you know, violence. And if the violence isn't so obvious that, you know, it's, you know, on the news, then, you know, the violence is happening at the in line at the grocery store, you know, because you don't like somebody all of a sudden, or they look at you the wrong way, you know. And I think that, you know, the compassion thing can be at play, like, in our everyday lives. And it's just like, just be nice, you know. And it's not like we say be nice and it's like, what does that mean? That's interpreted in different ways. And I feel like instead of like telling people what they should be as a way of trying to help people who are interested in, you know, cultivating their compassion, I think it's like giving more, it seems like give examples of things like that aren't helping, because those seem to be more prevalent than the things that are helping sometimes. So, like, you know, and I was thinking about this, like, okay, you know, what if you have a moment where you, if something irritates you, you know, maybe it starts out as like a little irritation and you find yourself making the frowny face, like, I don't like that, you know, idea. And then maybe that, you know, and I think that's what happens, is it then kind of turns into, you know, a thing where it can get bigger. It's like all of a sudden I don't like person. It starts, you know, again, like attaching to something and taking shape and taking form. And I think if somehow if we were to, like, you know, take a moment, right, and feel like, where are we feeling that? Where is that resonating in our body? You know, where do we feel that,
yeah,
right? And where,
yeah,
can we move it to? If we can take that, if it's in our, say, root chakra, and we feel, you know, feelings of insecurity are starting to go around this thing, you know, as it takes shape, you know, and starting to, like, really make us feel like we need to build a wall of some sort, you know. Then maybe we need to, like, you know, like, really, like, consciously work on shifting that up, shifting it up. Then, you know, once it reaches the heart center, is that really what's in our heart? Is that really there? Because I feel like a lot of people are sending out little waves of hurt, whether it's the way that they talk to others, it's the way they just feel about each other, you know, it's the way that they use social media, or the way they take in the news, or the way they give the news, or the way they, you know, feel about the government, or the way they are the government, you know, like all of the,
yeah,
every level, you know. I feel like, you know, what's really in their hearts is the confusing part, you know. It's confusing,
yeah,
to, you know, like, okay, well, are you really that, you know, mean, you know, like, or is it just something that they're repeating and they're not realizing the effect of? I don't know what to make of it. What do you think?
Well, I think the heart knows, and I think that the mind is confused, or that not the mind so much as the human brain, you know, has a lot of confusion, and not necessarily in the listening of the heart. The heart's not a thinking space, it's a knowing space. Generally speaking,
yeah,
what I found in myself is that the heart seeks to love. It seeks to be loved, and it seeks to love, be love. You know,
yeah,
and it just knows that. And all this other stuff around all the details and things, this and confusions, this is just an operation of the ego brain that's happening. You know, not,
yeah,
being in the listening of the heart. So, and similarly for me, what I find is that, you know, just based on the physics of the reality, and the physics of the reality would say that the only thing that I experience in this realm that we're in is my own perceptions, my own senses, my own feelings, thoughts, intuitions. And this is a truth from the moment I'm born to the moment I die. Everything that I experience is going to be within myself and from my own perspective. And so I get to own that reality that I'm in. So if something outside of me or someone outside of me or a situation has activated me, it's not about them. It's about why am I activated? how is this situation or this person a reflection of myself? You know, are they, is it similar to me in some way? Is it inverse to me in some way? You know, what is there for me to learn from the situation so that I'm no longer activated by it? And so just as you say, it's like when I get activated by something in my external world, the ideal scenario is for me to turn in and not look at the other, but for me to turn in and look at why I'm activated. And that's where I have power to work with it, because that's within myself.
Yeah.
You know, I don't have power to influence the external reality unless I've taken on the work of having my self-mastery first. And then as I identify why I'm activated or what is this pattern that I'm seeing, and I shift my own way of being and my own perception, then my reality follows suit. The reflection changes with me. And so a great little metaphor for this is, you know, I go to the mirror and I look in the mirror and there's this dirty, hairy guy who looks like he needs a shave and a shower, you know, and I'm like, clean yourself up. You know, and I start shouting at the reflection like, that's going to do anything. And
right.
It's very much like we deal with our world. You know, we go out and we start shouting at the reflection, but when all it takes is like, wow, or I could pick up the razor and a comb and deal with what's going on my side of the reflection, and then it'll all be fine. It'll look beautiful then.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, you know, it's interesting, you know, and you and I just, you know, talked about this, like, I think, you know, just like in one of our, you know, marathon conversations that we love to have. I love this so much.
Me too.
You know, we talked about like the actual like benefits of it. So it's like, even though we're talking about, you know, how, you know, compassion we think in relationship to us and others, it really has a lot of benefits for ourselves, and a lot of those are even health benefits. And that might surprise some people, but there's actually been scientific MRI, you know, fMRI studies on this to see like what, you know, psychologists, of course, have done their thing. You know, they always do. You know, they've always like, you know, they're breaking it down for everybody. How it works. But neuropsychologists have also done interesting experiments at like, people that actually work with the brain. And what they have found is, what they found a lot of stuff, now, different types of compassion, you know, they break it down into two different types. So it's like compassion for social pain that other people are experiencing and compassion for physical pain. And, you know, a lot, compassion in general will activate a lot of areas, and then those two break down to activating different areas. But what I found was fascinating was the statement that feelings and acts of compassion have been found to stimulate areas known to regulate homeostasis, such as insular cortex and hypothalamus. So when you talk about homeostasis, right, that's like you're a living organism and everything's like steadily working there, right? So that's a good thing. So what it makes me wonder is like, okay, you know, what are those other, what's the opposite of compassion doing to our own regulatory systems within our body, you know? I don't think it's good, you know. So if having compassion is for others, and to me, look, you know, that idea of like a living organism, we're living on a living organism. We're connected to billions and billions of living organisms. So, you know, we've got to, you know, help do our life support part of this, you know, for our own beings. And I think for the planet, I think it matters to the planet. I don't think it's like going too far out there to say that it makes a difference. But did I go too far? Reel me back in.
The Dalai Lama would say the same thing, you know, that compassion is the key to human survival. Without it, we're doomed. you know, it's kind of like, and within my own body to scale it back down. Now, I'm not a doctor or neuroscientist, so a lot of those words went right over my head, honestly, but I get the concept,
right.
You know, it's like, if I carry stress in my body, what does that stress help my body? You know, it just really doesn't serve it. You know, it causes the heart problems and it causes well-being problems all around, all kinds of health problems, you know, the way that stress can manifest. But if I'm in a place of compassion, you know, and I'm able to handle and recognize everything with peace, I don't even need to waste my time with worry and struggle. And even when suffering arrives on my doorstep in some form, I can greet it with joy. You know, and it's no longer really the suffering that I knew before. And that's even true for physical suffering. You know, if I'm able to embrace the pain that I'm feeling, the pain no longer sends me in the spiral of suffering. You know, I can actually just be with it, and it's hard to describe, but it just doesn't really hurt the same way anymore. Because the resistance isn't there. It's not a struggle anymore.
Right.
You know, and so the suffering is removed from the pain.
Exactly. Because suffering just makes it worse. And that's why, you know, this month's crystal is rose quartz. To me, that is like the epitome of compassion in crystal form. And I think it's like a wonderful, like, vibration, heart chakra stone, pink, cheap, easy to find, and, you know, a great way. Because, you know, there's this, you know, the word trigger is one that that's getting overused a lot, right? You know, and it means different things. You know, and we can be triggered in a way that, you know, we're instantly, you know, suffering, you know, somebody says something hurtful,
right,
or we read something hurtful, and it's like, boom, there's our suffering trigger, you know. And I'm recommending rose quartz as our compassion trigger, because I feel like even if you don't carry rocks in your pockets like some people we know do, you know, if you don't do that, which, why would you not do that? But it's okay. I'm not judging. You know, but if you don't do that, you can at least, like, you know, Google it. Look at a picture of rose quartz, you know. And, you know, and somehow take that image in your heart, you know, reference it. Bring it back into your consciousness. You know, when you know, you are going into that, something's triggered you for suffering, you know, bring in the rose quartz, bring in that imagery, bring in whatever trigger for, you know, that might work better for you, if there is one, like a magic word, I don't know, you know, but bring in the compassion to counterbalance it, to kind of get you back to not suffering, whether you're in, regardless of the pain you may be feeling. Because I think that's really important, is, like, you know, we have that old saying, misery loves company, you know, and, you know, misery is suffering, and we can't control every aspect of our existence. I think most of us have learned that through trial and error, or not, you know, and we can't control everything, that bad things are apt to happen at some point, you know, and in some way, and they may be a physical injury, or they may be a broken heart, you know, they may be a loss. And, you know, if we're not using, like you said, the self-compassion, you know, then chances are we're suffering more. And the word compassion is interesting. It comes from, you know, basically it goes way back to Old Latin, you know, it goes through French and Old English and gets back to compati in Old Latin, which means to suffer with somebody, you know.
Wow.
So we're in compassion, we're suffering with. So you talking about, like, greeting, you know, the suffering or greeting the pain, I'm like, wow, that's compassion. You're suffering with it, You know, you're like, okay, yeah. In these days we look at it as identifying. If you identify and understand why someone might feel a certain way, you know, I think that helps, you know. And you know, it's funny because it's like, you know, empathy is a big word too. Actually, it's a smaller word than compassion. You know, just right. You know what I mean? technically, but it's a big idea.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, some people are afraid of it. I don't want to feel what other people are feeling. And compassion, I feel like, hey, you know, you don't have to, like, you know, do that. You don't have to, like, literally go through the motions. You can just have some understanding and say, like, you know what? I'm not going to hate you for that, okay? You may, you know, like different things than I do or believe something different than I do or define yourself in a different way, but I don't need to hate you for it. You know, I mean, I live in Texas. You know, it may be as easy as getting that concept across in some ways to some people, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, just you don't have to do that, you know. So, I mean, there's ton of different, you know, ways that we can get there. What do you think is, like, your most accessible tool for compassion that you could share?
You went through a few different little pieces there. And, you know, I'll resolve to the tool, but I'll talk around it a little bit. You know, it's like, really, there's a piece around understanding. And this is key in a lot of the old texts about compassion, that we can't actually know compassion or know someone else's suffering unless we've experienced that same suffering ourselves. So, for example, if someone has lost a loved one and they've died, you know, I'm going to have a very hard time understanding what that person is going through unless I've also experienced the loss of a loved one, you know. Because I really can't be inside of that realm, or I can't truly understand what that person is going through. You know, I can only make up stories about what I think it might be like, you know. And so that's not always possible, even though there's an ideal to it. You know, and we can really gain a lot of understanding for others if we have shared experiences, but it's not always possible, and it's not always possible to empathize. And sometimes, you know, it's not going to make sense at all how someone else is behaving, because we're not looking through their lens. And so, you know, then it comes down to, well, how do I offer compassion in those scenarios where I can really just not even grasp it at all? You know,
yes.
It's just like having a general understanding that says, like, look, trust they're in their own lessons, you know, because we all have those. And then for me, you know, the tool, meditation, transcendental meditation, what else? You know, breathe, let go of judgment, let go of judgment continually. And then that opens up that space of compassion and allowance, where the empathy and the sympathy and the understanding don't even have to fully be there to still be acting with compassion.
Yeah. Yeah.
I hope that made sense.
That makes a lot of sense. It makes a lot of sense to me. And, you know, I think that's true. I mean, we have to meet people where they're at. We can't meet somebody and say, like, okay, you know, this is where you need to be. Let me tell you, I know everything about everything. You know, I mean, it's like we, you know, and you know that. You used a great word earlier, allowance, you know, allow everybody not to be perfect. Allow yourself not to be perfect. Excuse for anything, but just that it's like a baseline. It's like, okay, we're not perfect. All right, if we start there, then you know, we could just start there. Like, and then you know, develop, you know, recognize the things that we value. I think that you know, I have found value in surprising things and surprising people and surprising places. And that I think having compassion, the other thing, right, is that you're right. It's not about judgment, right? It's just like forgiveness isn't about, I don't know, whatever forgiveness isn't supposed to be about, that people are like, hey, it's not about that. I forget what it is. What is it? Yes, thank you.
Forgiveness is not about blame, and it's not about excusing someone for wrongdoing, you know. Forgiveness is about allowance. It comes before, not after.
And compassion is too, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's like,
they're inherently entwined.
You know, that's the thing I think we, like, I didn't think of that. You just thought of that. I was going to say, that's the thing that we don't think about. And I'm like, well, I didn't think about it either. You know, until just now. And that's a huge thing, you know, because it's like, it's not like giving your mark of approval or your judgment. You know, you can have compassion with somebody, you know, for someone else or for, you know, a situation or whatever, and not have to look at it as like, oh, you're okay with that then? You're okay with, like, their whole life? You know, it's like, no, I just, you know, it's not that, you know, because I feel like there's that challenge, the challenge, and it goes back to that, how do I convince people? How do I convince people that this is the only point of view, you know, that they should have? You know, it's a funny thing, but hey, you know, my goodness, you know, we could, I feel like seriously, you and I have talked about, you and I could talk about this for like 5 more shows, I think. But I wanted to also, you know, because it's so cool that you could come on and you know, rap with me about this. You know, I'm trying to be like old school there. Rap with it. We had a rap session on compassion. But I want people to know you have been doing mind-blowing things. And I posted about the show on psychictalk.net. If you go to the blog there, and then I shared it in the group and the Tarot Guild group, as well as the Psychic Talk Radio group, and put the links up to like your site, so you can go to the blog, you can go to the groups, you can find the posts, you can see the links to Cedar's site, where you can see all the amazing things that Cedar's doing. So why don't you tell us what's up? You've been doing wild things, and you have all this wild stuff planned.
Wild is a
music.
Great word to describe my life over the last year. Has been something else. You know, around last December, I kind of moved from being into a lot of poetic works and trying to use language to describe these very transcendental ideas. You know, it's like that was the way that I was sharing my gift at the time. And as of last December, I sort of bridged into music, which I never knew was even in the realm of possibility for me. And I find that, you know, music and art, this is a really great way to engage with people in a way that's not divisive. You know, anyone from any walk of life can appreciate art. There's nothing political. There's nothing to divide or separate. And so it's become a wonderful way to communicate and deliver the gifts that I have that are of a more spiritual nature. In a very, very innocuous way. Excuse me.
Wow.
Sorry, I've been fighting this off. So, so I've done, in the last year, I've released 6 music albums as a solo artist, electronic music. And so it's been a continual creative process. I'm loving being in the stream. More recently, in my new excitement, is around a band that is coming together, known as Cedar Moose, spelled Cedar, and Moose spelled M-W-S. That's the Welsh spelling of Moose, for those who don't know. And this is just an amazing, fairly unique type of deal where I've worked together and collaborated with some couple of very tremendous artists over in England. And they're amazing performers, very crafts experts with their instruments and with how they run their own band. They've got a couple of bands and projects they've worked on in the past. So we met on the blockchain and on Minds.com, social networking, and we started collaborating, and this is just like a match made in heaven. I can't even describe how perfect this scenario is. And we've been able to so far produce 4 songs from across oceans and continents from each other. And we're publishing those as quickly as we can create them and publish them. And then we're going to be looking to start an international tour here probably toward the end of the year, the beginning of next year.
So awesome. Will you be coming to the U.S.?
We will be coming to the U.S. That's definitely in our list of intentions. You know, we're going to kind of go over there in the Liverpool area where the Beatles came out of, and kind of off West Street, which is where the Moose Band is. And we're going to start putting together our performance, and it's no doubt going to be great performance material. And we're going to kind of get our practice and get our feet wet over there, and then we're going to bring it back here and let ourselves snowball across the United States and really share the magic here. And this is music unlike anything you've ever heard. You know, people believe it's all been done. We definitely have a very unique sound and feel to
where
us.
Is there any place online people can go to hear it, like that, your website, right, that
Absolutely.
I posted?
Yes,
awesome.
The website that I posted has links to Cedar Moose, and that Cedar Moose website has the music on it. Plus another place we post is on choon.co, which is choon.co. And you can just look up Cedar Moose on there, and you'll hear the songs that we've created together so far.
And that's Cedar Moose, M-W-S, Moose, the, why Welsh? The Welsh spelling. Why Welsh?
Well, Innes Reed is our guitarist and the guitarist of Moose. He's actually of Welsh descent. And for those who know the geography over there, Oswestry is actually fairly close to the border of Wales. So it's definitely a cultural presence in the band's name and in our music. And that's why we went with the Moose spelling in that way, you know. And it's also the name of the duet. So the duet that is Moose is Innes Reed. He plays guitar, does mixing, does recording, just really all-around expert at his work. And then also Deborah Harris, who plays multiple brass and woodwind instruments. The best baritone saxophone player I've heard in my life. You really got to check out Moose also. Truly tremendous performance. So their prior band is named Moose.
What is it that, you know, maybe you experience or that you feel when you're creating music that is different, or you know, what is it what do you think is operating within you in a different way, like on an energetic level, you know?
Well,
through the chakras or what? Oh, I know.
You know, it's like I start into the tools that I'm using, and I start kind of mixing up music and then I'm getting this instrumentation more recently, you know, like with the band. And I'm really just trying to get into the spirit of what the song is, you know, and it becomes less about me. You know, people might think that I'm the one there shaping the song, but quite honestly, the song shapes me when I'm in this process. And I'm really like, I know the song has its own spirit, and I'm looking to honor the spirit of whatever that song is. And I find that I'm the one that has to give and bend and change so that the true spirit of the song can come out. And so it'll put me in a place where I like kind of disappear from 3D for days on end. And then I kind of like wake up at a certain point, just having been immersed in this creative field. And, you know, I really can't even describe it with words, but I'll, like, kind of come to. And then there's this song, and it'll just like have this huge resonant or emotional, some kind of impact on me. I'll be like, wow, like this is what I brought back from the depths, you know,
yeah.
from being in this
yeah.
creative zone. But it's the creative energy itself is life-giving for me. It's, you know, it's my everything. And even if there's other things going on in my reality, you know, if I'm, even if I was going hungry, for example, the energy and that creative energy actually fulfills me. It sustains me.
Like manna.
And makes
manna.
It is just like mana, yeah, or prana, you know. It's like
yeah.
I'm enlivened by it. I'm living for it. And it's keeping me alive. You know, it's just this amazing
yeah.
experience to be able to be in this place.
Well, and also to like tie, you know, bring it full circle here, doing that, being creative, expressing that, going through that journey and feeling that energy of the creative process, don't you think that if more people did that, more people would naturally be compassionate? Because I feel like there's a connection
yeah.
to creativity and compassion.
Yeah, there's a symbiosis in the things you're talking about. You know, I think that a lot of people have a great gift within themselves that is yet undiscovered or untapped into. And the reason that that is there is because they have not allowed themselves to express it. You know, so they
wow.
haven't had the self-compassion that says, like, look, I can go ahead and put myself out there without thinking and judging and criticizing. And so this is
yeah.
sort of one of the things that I've done differently. I don't have a huge musical background, you know,
right.
and I don't have a voice in classical singing training. And it's like the idea of me coming out and trying to sing or make songs to any logical person just doesn't make sense. So it's like for me to actually move into creating music and being in that creative flow, I had to get past all that self-judgment and allow myself to sound like what I sound like and then make
yeah.
the most of that gift. And so
self-compassion.
Here I self-compassion and allowing others to, this is really important. It's like, you know, for one, you know, allow yourself to express that creative uniqueness of yourself. You know, that's a priceless
yeah.
gift that comes with your life and it's meant to be shared. So allow yourself to express it and allow other people to express themselves without all the critique, you know, which is
yeah.
so short-sighted in a way. There's a rule
yeah.
I learned in poetry, and I'm not much for rules, but there's a rule I learned in poetry. It says there's no bad poetry. And,
oh, wow.
Know,
hey.
Nothing can grasp that.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and I just saw this great message. We're almost out of time. We didn't take any calls because there's so much to
cool.
talk about on this topic. But there's this beautiful message from one of our listeners in the chat room, Kamba Bob. I don't know if I'm saying that right, but he says, music is a very powerful medium for connecting with others. This is his 54th year as a paid stage performer, and he loves sharing the passion and the message of the song. And he said, I haven't had a music lesson in my life. I just sing from my heart. So that is
yeah.
so much, you know, yeah. I mean, take it from Kamba Bob there, who's doing this 54 years, which is, like, incredibly
wow.
wonderful. That's amazing. But, and he hasn't had a music lesson. So forget, you know, and people listening, forget the doubts and the beating yourself up and just, you know, come from the heart. Come from the heart.
Yeah.
And that's where your little rose quartz crystals right there in your heart, you know. Your compassion trigger, whatever, you know, you want to call it. I mean, there it is. And you know, you just can't go wrong with, like, if we could put on, you know, people talk about rose-colored glasses, like, oh, you're just seeing, you know, that, you know, for people that are too optimistic somehow, you know, you're just seeing what, you know, things in a nice way. And I say, put on your rose quartz glasses, you know, and then
yeah.
you're seeing things through the light of compassion, the filter of compassion. instead of like, you know, some yucky other filter.
Yeah.
I'm having a hard time with my metaphors and analogies today. This is that kind of day. But I know it's almost the end of the show. Before we go, I know I need to mention to everyone that we have a lot of great shows, I think 7 days a week now, here on Psychic Talk Radio. And those shows can easily be found by going to psychictalk.net, actually, and you can say listen to our shows and click on that. But just to give you an idea, tomorrow on Sunday, November 4th, the Akashic Records, Tarot, Past Lives, and More, with special guest Sylvia Chappelle on the Angelic Realm Show with your host Maria Moss and Sharona Rapsik. And then on Monday, November 5th, the Chakra Series wrapping up with on the Compassionate Light Healing and Guidance Show with your host, Catherine Hahn, who's going to wrap up her series of episodes on the chakras and is going to be talking about that and taking calls and all kinds of good stuff. And then on the 6th, we have Agnostic Michelle Bivinette. Special series on exploring belief and no belief, and she is the guest on the Power of Three Hope, Wisdom, and Healing Show with your hosts Rose Fulhurst, Fiona Millar, and Agnostic Michelle will be the guest on that show. And then Wednesday is going to be fun. November 7th, Open Lines of Readings. It's a new staff co-host weekly show on a show called Psychic Talk Radio with host Rose Wilkerson, Dax Carlisle, and Open Lines with new staff co-host Angela Johnston from the UK. So lots of good stuff coming up here, and then, you know, dial it forward a few days and it'll be Saturday again, and I'll be back on the Psychic Saturday show with Dax Carlisle, taking your calls, doing readings, being all psychic. So again, Cedar, before we go, do you want to give out, you know, any, because, oh my gosh, you guys also, you know, we talk about the Psychic Talk Radio Facebook group. If you're into crystals, you have to join Cedar's Crystal Grid Masters. Is that the name of it? Am I getting that right?
That's
your Facebook
correct.
Group?
Yeah. Yes.
Oh my gosh. It's like just for the pictures alone.
Oh, they're beautiful,
awesome.
Aren't they?
It is. And I don't know how you did it, you know. I mean, people put together Facebook groups all the time. I put together Facebook groups all the time. And, you know, you know, we have great stuff going on our Facebook groups, but somehow I swear, you know, you collected all the actual crystal grid masters on the planet. You know, the working grid masters out there, because, man, you want to tap into some energy, you got to join that Facebook group. It is wildly invigorating.
It's my daily medicine.
It is. It's mine, too. So check that out. Check out, go to the blog post, go to the Facebook groups, check out Cedar's work, check out his music for sure. You got to hear it. It is so... it's magic. It's just magic to me. I know there's all these people involved in instruments and everything, but I listen to it and I'm like, wow, this is a magical sound. And I love it. And thank you so much for being on today, Cedar.
Thanks for having me, love. It's always a pleasure.
All right. Well, talk to you later. I'll catch you on the flip side. And everybody else, I hope that you have a magical, mystical rest of your weekend. And bye-bye, everybody.
Much love. Bye-bye.
Bye, Peter. Bye, everybody. Happy.